News, I'm Tommy McNeil.
The Federal Aviation Administration has issued an emergency order grounding all Boeing 737 MAX jets immediately in response to the weekend disaster involving an Ethiopian Airlines jet. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
The acting head of the FAA, Daniel Elwell, says after studying enhanced images from the weekend crash and finding a similarity to what happened in October with the same type of jet in Indonesia,
the FAA is ordering the temporary grounding of Boeing 737 MAX aircraft.
Why did the agency wait while other countries had grounded those jets?
We are a fact-driven, a data-based organization.
A Canadian aviation official says before both crashes, an automatic system kicked in to force the nose of the aircraft down. Boeing says it supports the FAA decision to ground the new jetliners, although it still has full confidence in their safety. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
The U.S. Senate is expected to go against President Trump Thursday by disapproving the president's national emergency declaration to fund wall construction along the U.S.-Mexico border. A handful of Senate Republicans have committed to joining a unified Democratic caucus, rejecting the emergency declaration. But White House spokeswoman Mercedes Schlapp says that President Trump wants Republican senators to show unity when they vote on his national emergency declaration.
They know exactly where the president stands on this. And so, in essence, he does see how the Democrats view this as for them it's about open borders and they stick together on open borders. For Republicans, he's made it very clear a vote for national security is a vote for border security.
The democratically controlled House of Representatives already approved the measure, which is expected to trigger the first veto of Mr. Trump's presidency. The U.S. Senate defied President Trump Wednesday and voted to cut off support for the Saudi-led coalition fighting rebels in Yemen. This is VOA News. A federal judge in Washington has sentenced former Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort to 3.5 years in prison for conspiracy and witness tampering stemming from his work as a lobbyist for Ukraine's former pro-Russian president. The sentence comes on top of the nearly 4 years in prison Manafort received last week on federal charges of tax and bank fraud. Now President Trump says he feels very badly for Manafort. More from AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Hours after Manafort was sentenced.
On a human basis, it's a very sad thing.
Would he consider pardoning Manafort, an idea he's floated before?
I have not even given it a thought as of this moment.
The president said he was unaware New York is now charging Manafort with state crimes, which is seen as a strategy for preventing a potential presidential pardon. Sagar Magani at the White House.
Islamic State fighters launched new counterattacks against U.S.-backed forces Wednesday as the militants clung to the terror group's last scrap of territory in northeastern Syria. An unknown number of IS fighters have been hiding in a small area by the town of Baghouz, covered now by bullet-ravaged campsites and broken buildings. British lawmakers have ruled out Theresa May's proposed deal with the EU to finalize Brexit, putting pressure on May to find a way out of the impasse. We get more from Reuters' Lucy Fielder.
Now lawmakers will decide whether to delay Brexit. That's Thursday's vote in this week's parliamentary marathon. If yes, Britain will seek an extension to the negotiation period, or Article 50. But the EU will have to agree. And its Brexit negotiator is already asking, more time for what? May will have to explain to Brussels how a few more months would do anything more than prolong the agony of this deeply divided country. Despite this week's drama, all Brexit bets remain off, with possible outcomes including a delay, a last-minute passing of May's deal, an accidental no-deal Brexit, or another referendum. Investors fear a no-deal Brexit would plunge the world's fifth-largest economy into turmoil. So Wednesday's vote was expected.
That's Reuters' Lucy Fielder. A Nigerian emergency official said at least 8 people have died and nearly 40 others rescued from a collapsed building in Lagos. An unknown number of children are dead or trapped in the rubble of the 3-story building that housed a primary school. The U.S. State Department is painting a grim picture of violations and abuses in countries that already have dismal records in its country reports on human rights practices for 2018. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo Wednesday highlighted abuses in Iran, South Sudan, Nicaragua, and China. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. DRC President Felix Tshisekedi on Wednesday pardoned about 700 political prisoners.
Oppose the most famous figures like Frank Diongo and Freeman Yangambi received the presidential pardon.
Abba Malika is the former chief of staff of the late Etienne Tshisekedi. French President Emmanuel Macron is on a visit to Kenya. Burundi rejects a UN report critical of the government's human rights record. Days of flooding in Malawi kill 56 people and leaves 83,000 displaced. And rescue work continued into the night in Lagos, Nigeria, following the collapse of a building which also houses a school.
After the last time we spoke with some emergency officials, we were told that over 50 people were rescued, and they confirmed that at least 10 people were killed who were got out of trouble.
That's Samson O'Malley of Views Daybreak Africa's posting in Abuja, Nigeria. And South Sudan wants to form a 700-strong joint special force to provide security for top government officials. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Felix Tshisekedi of the Democratic Republic of Congo has made good on his promise 2 weeks ago to grant amnesty to political prisoners in the country. Late last night, local time, he announced the pardon of about 700 political prisoners jailed during the administration of former President Joseph Kabila. Abba Malika is the former chief of staff of the late Etienne Tshisekedi, the father of the current president. He says prominent among those granted amnesty are political activist Firmin Yangambi, who was sentenced to 20 years in 2009 on charges of being a threat to national security, and also Frank Diongo, president of the Lumumba-based Progressive Movement MPL party and a close ally of the late Etienne Tshisekedi.
There's been a total of nationwide about 700 prisoners, mainly political prisoners and prisoners of opinion. So that's a figure nationwide. Of course, the most famous figures like Frank Diongo and Freeman Yangambi received the presidential pardon. As for Eugene Diomi Ndongala, he will be granted the provisional release pending the return of the Minister of Justice tomorrow to sign the decree.
Now, you mentioned the most famous of those released. The president himself, Felix Tshisekedi, his father, was an opposition leader for so long. These people that have been pardoned, that have been released, did they have any connection with any political parties like the president's own father's political party?
Well, Frank Diongo has a very long associate of the late President Tshisekedi in his fight. You remember Frank Diongo was even with the late President Tshisekedi's delegation during the inclusive dialogue of Sun City back in 2003 when they created the Alliance for the Survival of the Dialogue. Freeman Yangambi is a civil society activist who was arrested 10 years ago on the ground of undermining state security, but he's always been very outspoken against Kabila dictatorship. So he was condemned to 20 years in prison. He already made it 10 years in prison, and he also got the presidential pardon. As for Mr. Diomi, who was also the political associate of the late President Tshisekedi in his last years of effective struggle, he was arrested on the grounds of having such a relation with minor. So in this case, he's been granted a provisional release, which will be signed by the Minister of Justice when he comes back to Kinshasa tomorrow.
Mr. Malika, 2 weeks ago, President Felix Tshisekedi said he was going to announce this release of political prisoners. During that time, he also said that he was going to make it possible for Congolese in exile for political reasons to come back. One of those people is Katumbi. Did the announcement mention anything about political exiles?
I think we have to look at it as a process, Mr. Batty. And I think that maybe in days or weeks to come, there will be other decisions concerning mainly people who are in exile, like you mentioned Mr. Katumbi, you have also Mr. Mbanda and many others, like Mr. Musa as well. These are all cases that were mentioned already many times, and even some of them were mentioned were part of the famous December 31, 2016 agreement between Kabila's government and the opposition.
Abba Malika is the former chief of staff of the late Etienne Tshisekedi. You're speaking with me from the DRC capital, Kinshasa. French President Emmanuel Macron is in Kenya for a historic visit, the first ever by a French president. Macron and his Kenyan counterpart, President Uhuru Kenyatta, signed several agreements to spur growth in the two countries. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Macron is also expected to attend the One Planet Summit in Nairobi on reversing climate change.
The two heads of state agreements were based on the Nairobi Central Railway Station Energy Project, Plant Health Programs, and the Big Four Agenda on Food Security, Universal Health Coverage, Affordable Housing, and Manufacturing. Speaking in State House Nairobi yesterday, Wednesday, President Uhuru Kenyatta said that the talks are geared towards expanding diplomatic ties between the two countries.
Mr. President, your visit signals our shared commitment to foster our bilateral relations and engagements within the region in various ways which will deepen, expand, and strengthen our bonds of friendship and cooperation for the mutual benefit of our people. France continues to be one of the most important contributors to our tourism sector. We also expect that this visit by President Macron will help increase the number of tourists from France and Kenyans going to France also exponentially. We also expect the visit to impact on the number of French businessmen and investors that would want to invest in Kenya.
The two heads of state also agreed on sustaining regional integration. The France President Emmanuel Macron said that France will collaborate fully with Kenya to counter terrorism that has long been a threat to Kenya and neighboring countries.
We are deeply committed in working together with Kenya on different topics. First, security, counterterrorism, and obviously the regional agenda. We discussed at length about the situation in the region. We work very well together on the situation, but we want to improve the cooperation in the region from a security and defense point of view. Beyond economy, what we want to do is as well to be a partner in terms of research and education. We've just signed some agreements, but in total we have 7 agreements.
Towards boosting Kenya's manufacturing sector, President Kenyatta called on all state entities to buy and use locally assembled vehicles and spare parts of Peugeot model manufactured by a French firm. Kenyatta says the policy directive is meant to create more jobs for Kenyans.
I would once again like to restate our policy that is part of our government agenda to promote the philosophy of Buy Kenya, Build Kenya among our people. All government entities will be expected to buy and use locally assembled vehicles and spare parts for all official government use. This policy directive is intended to promote our agenda on manufacturing, creating good jobs for our people, and enhancing technology transfer to our country.
France is 17th largest Kenya's trading partner, and the visit will see the bilateral ties between the two states expand. Macron is also expected to address One Planet Summit in Nairobi on reversing climate change today, Thursday, before leaving the country later in the day. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 14th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Rescue work continued late last night in Lagos, Nigeria, following the collapse of a three-story commercial and residential building, which also houses an illegal nursery and primary school. Samson O'Malley of VOA's Daybreak Africa's Pause says the collapse is symptomatic of Nigeria's poorly regulated buildings construction.
The building came down at about 10 a.m. local time, and for the most part of the day, rescuers and first responders were battling to see how they can rescue people, who were trapped under the rubble in the building. After the last time we spoke with some emergency officials, we were told that Over 50 people were rescued, and they've confirmed that at least 10 people were killed who were brought out of rubble Wednesday afternoon.
Looking at the picture in the story I was reading, it seems to me the building is located in a very cluster area with other buildings.
Absolutely. It's a residential area. And what happens in this part of town is the fact that people usually will convert residential buildings and make it a multi-purpose building where you have different kinds of activities going on. Sometimes you have business offices, stalls. You have people living in certain floors. In this instance, it's no different because you have the three floors, two of them occupied by this on-hand Nostra Primary School, as it is called. And then you have the ground floor, where it's a residential place where people have taken it as apartments. So it's a multi-purpose building, and normally you would expect that the regulatory body, especially in Lagos, will move in to check these and to properly ensure that this building meets safety standards and all of that.
As I was reading the comments from some of the residents of this building, and so also nearby residents, including even the governor of Lagos State, he said that the school had been operating illegally. Some of these residents talk about government regulation of construction in Nigeria, which they describe as poor. I know the president spoke last night. What did he have to say?
Well, the president just commiserated with those who lost their lives and, of course, with the families. And he called on the Lagos State government to ensure that those who were injured and who were victims of this building collapse were taken care of. One important thing from the president's statement was the fact that he never talked about building perpetrators or those responsible for checking these buildings and regulators to book. He never talked about any punishment. He never talked about bringing them in court. The statement fell short of all of that. All he did say was that he was saddened by the collapse and, of course, by the number of people who were lost in this particular incident. But James, let me remind you very quickly that this is not the first time we're having incidences of building collapse in Lagos. One case in point was a very popular one that happened about 3-4 years ago, where you had a church belonging to the popular Nigeria tele-evangelist, Prophet T.B. Joshua, where his part of his building collapsed and over 80 South Africans died in that particular incident. And after that, we had a lot of people, the engineers were responsible for putting the building together. They were arraigned in court, and that case is still on as we speak, and that's over 3 years ago.
Samson, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much, James.
Samson Omale of Viewers Daybreak Africa Sports in Abuja, Nigeria. The death toll from rising floods in Malawi has risen to 56 and as many as 83,000 people displaced from weeks of heavy rains. President Peter Mutharika last Friday declared a state of emergency. Malawi's Information Minister Nicholas Dawusi says the situation could get worse as the country braces for more rain and flooding today, Thursday, when the tropical cyclone Ida is expected to make landfall.
The latest is that indeed we have lost a lot of people and that there are almost 300 isolated camps where displaced people due to heavy rains and hailstorms has caused their houses to fall and roofs blown off. We have a substantial number of people injured and in the districts of Mangochi, Machinga, Zomba, Mulanje, Palombe, in the south of Malawi, these are the hard-hit districts. By and large, it's a terrible human suffering. The rains have really caused substantial damage to life, property, and houses.
What is the latest forecast? I mean, are you expecting more rains?
The latest weather forecast shows that there will be cyclone Ida, another terrible hailstorm, which is forecast to be coming from Indian Ocean through Mozambique, Beira, and to Malawi. That's another worry, and we just pray to God that it doesn't bounce us too much, otherwise we'll have nothing left.
The information we have is that 83,000 people have been displaced. Now, Malawi is supposed to have elections coming up in May. Do you think this might have an impact on the planning for the election?
Well, we pray that by the end of this March or early April, people will be able to have settled in their homes and that they will be able to participate in the elections. The Malawi Electoral Commission will advise us properly, but we think and pray that people will be able to exercise their inalienable constitutional right of freedom to choose bidder of their choice. So I hope it will be that way, and we pray that and not this forecast predicted new cyclone and hailstorm should not come so that people don't suffer again.
Is this flooding also at the cities like Blantyre? Are they affected by the flooding, or this is just in the rural areas?
Blantyre was affected in isolated places, but the extensive damage has been in Sanje Chikwawa and the rural area.
Nicola Diosi is Malawi's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Blantyre. Burundi's government has rejected a report by the UN Commission of Inquiry on human rights violations in the country. Moses Havyarimana reports.
Burundi government rejected the report made by the UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi that indicated gross human rights violations continued to take place in the country. Burundi's human rights minister Martin Nivyabandi says that the Commission of Inquiry report was politically motivated.
On the side of the government of Burundi, our concern is that there is a total destroying the Human Rights Council. It was imposed by European Union bloc. The government of Burundi will continue also to work together with different institutions, national mechanisms of protection, human rights, with international community through different channels.
Despite the UN Commission of Inquiry still in place to investigate crimes committed during the 2015 political crisis, the three members of the commission were denied access to the country as the government considers them as persona non grata. Agatorasa, Burundi opposition leader, said that the international community is better to be associated in the activities in order to guarantee a free and fair 2020 elections.
We'd better conclude that dialogue which could not conclude in Arusha. We'd better think about a consensus on the electoral code. We'd better think about an election which can be trusted by both Burundians and international community as well.
The regional mediated inter-Burundi dialogue stalled in the last round of the talks after the government boycotted the talks in Arusha, citing that it won't sit together with those it accuses of plotting the failed coup in 2015. With just 1 year away to the country's general elections, a university professor in Burundi who preferred not to reveal his name said that the political space is still limited.
Well, the situation of human rights in Burundi remains fragile as we head to the 2020 elections. Some people still disappear even today, and the political space remains restricted as the opposition members are not really free to hold meetings, to meet with their members.
The Commission of Inquiry report comes weeks after the UN Human Rights Office in Burundi was forced to close after being suspended by the government in 2016. As the government said, the country had made sufficient progress in protection of human rights, which critics believe is not the case. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Joint Defense Board officials in South Sudan say they will form a 700-strong joint special force to provide security for top government officials in the transitional government of national unity. A government military spokesman says Juba will contribute 350 forces and the opposition will contribute the same number. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Officials say the move by the Joint Defense Board, which is tasked with implementing military and security arrangements, demonstrates South Sudan is moving forward with implementing the revitalized peace deal. South Sudan Army spokesman Major General Lulu Roy Kwang says the joint force will protect the presidency, which includes the five vice presidents, ministers, and officials at state levels. Kwang says training the 700 joint force will get underway soon and is expected to be completed before a transitional government is formed.
In reality, it could be more than 5, 10. But of course, training 5,000 at a go, 10,000 at a go is not practically possible. And that's why we have proposed this number, BIP protection, which is the presidency. And then the rest will follow with the joint forces.
Kwang says plans to pre-position supplies like food, health facilities, and logistical requirements is underway. He says the training will be held in Juba by tutors from the South Sudan People's Defense Force, not Ugandan or Sudanese forces, as stipulated in the peace deal. But nowhere in the agreement does it mention creating a 700 joint force to protect VIPs. Implementing the security arrangements is far behind schedules as the 8-month pre-transitional period expires in 2 months. Kwang says that is a problem.
Nobody has come forward from the international community to fund transitional security arrangements. And that's the reason why we are behind schedule in terms of meeting all the benchmarks, the processes.
SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampaul Gabriel agrees, but says certain individuals are happy with the way things are.
We have the political will to make sure we implement the security arrangement. But of course, we know there are some people, individuals, who are benefiting from this war. And these are the people who are dragging us really behind.
Kwang warns unless more money is raised soon, the peace partners will not form the new government on time.
If something unique does not happen in the next 2 to 3 months, and we find ourselves not in position to raise a proper, a good size joint protection force, and then I'm afraid that it might result in the delay in formation of a transitional government of national unity.
Kwang says if the peace partners fail to form a transitional government of national unity by May, the Joint Defense Board will advise the political leaders on the next possible course of action. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. President Felix Tshisekedi of the Democratic Republic of Congo has made good on his promise 2 weeks ago to grant amnesty to political prisoners in the country. Late last night, local time, he announced the pardon of about 700 political prisoners jailed during the administration of former President Joseph Kabila. Abba Malika, the former chief of staff of the late Etienne Tshisekedi, the father of the current president, says prominent among those granted amnesty are political activist Fermi Yangambi, who was sentenced to 20 years in 2009 on charges of being a threat to national security, and Frank Diongo, president of the Lumumba-based Progressive Movement Party and a close ally of the late Etienne Tshisekedi. The death toll from rising floods in Malawi has risen to 56, and as many as 83,000 people displaced from weeks of heavy rains. President Peter Mutharika last Friday declared a state of emergency. Malawi's Information Minister Nicholas Dawusi says the situation could get worse as the country braces for more rain and flooding today, Thursday, when the tropical cyclone Ida is expected to make landfall. And rescue work continued late last night in Lagos, Nigeria, following the collapse of a three-story commercial and residential building, which also houses an illegal nursery and primary school. And that is it for this Thursday, March 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty, Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. This week, a newsmaker interview with first-term Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger, a Democrat from the state of Virginia. We'll talk with her about a range of domestic and foreign policy issues, from immigration reform to the U.S. role in the world. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an exclusive interview with the Vice President of Malawi, Saulos Chilema. The Malayan politician and VOA's Shaka Sali discuss democracy and the upcoming elections. An in-depth look at Malawi's future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.